This is Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to Weekends. Goodness me, what a great interview there with therapist David Pickup in the last hour. And of course, check out our website episodes if you missed it, or to pick up on any of your latest interviews that you'd like to catch up with. So many great interview subjects that we've had on TNT and continue. Well, let me tell you, this hour, it's going to get even better because I have got famed author, JFK researcher, James Jim DiEugenio, joining me in just a moment. He's got a brand new book out that he's co-written with four other authors, three of whom who are lawyers, and this book is called Chokeholds, and I'll get Jim to explain exactly why he called it that and the significance of that title in terms of the evidence presented in the book. It's extraordinary. When you think about it, we keep talking about the subject of the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy in November of 1963 in Texas. And why do we keep talking about it? What does it really mean? Surely that's ancient history now and doesn't seem to matter. Well, on the contrary, it turns out that there was a conspiracy, which we now know 99% for certain. The only reason it's not 100 is that authority just won't change their mind or do anything about it at this stage. But what does it mean? Who was involved? Why? Who took the power from when the president was murdered on that fateful day? And what world would we be looking at today if it were very, very different? Well, the point is, in all of what we're seeing now, in the collapse of the Roman Empire, if you will, 2.0, and that is the Western Empire heading towards said collapse, what becomes of it and how will it happen? Will it be the origins of COVID? Will it be the bad medicine? Will it be the murder of JFK? Will it be something else that will be the trigger point for people to realize that the entire world will change and must change? And how much better would the world be if we got to the truth of the matter? And why is it that authority could be run by criminals and we can't get to the bottom of the truth? What else are they holding back? Well, Jim DiEugenio, as I said, will be up now. He has been researching the four major assassinations of the 1960s, JFK, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and Robert F. Kennedy for the last three decades, with special focus on JFK. He's the author of the JFK Assassination Chokeholds, the JFK Assassination and Destiny Betrayed. He's the screenwriter of Oliver Stone's latest film, JFK Revisited, which was released in two versions, a two-hour release subtitled Through the Looking Glass and a four-hour version subtitled Destiny Betrayed. Jim DiEugenio, welcome back to Weekends.
Nice to be here, Jason. Thank you.
Really good to see you, Jim, and good to have you on the show. And you will not stop. You must be the hardest working JFK researcher or researcher of any kind.
Well, I don't know about a comparative analysis, but I would say I'm probably one of the most hardworking that there is. Yes.
And it has to become to a point that it's a healthy obsession, because there's no statute of limitations on murder, and it's very hard to buy the official narrative, which we've seen. I think the Zapruder film alone should be enough to tell us that that was a lie, wouldn't you think?
Well, I'll say this: the MSM, the mainstream media, has a way of dodging almost every accusation that there is about the JFK case, one way or the other. And they've been very adroit at doing this, all right? I mean, one example, after the Kennedy assassination, the Zapruder film was not broadcast to the public for 12 years, all right, until 1975. When Geraldo Rivera showed it on Good Night America. And all that day, ABC was begging him not to show the film. Okay? You know, and he said, if you force me not to show this film, if you fire me, okay, I'm going to call a press conference and show the film, all right, at my termination press conference. How are you going to like that? All right? And so they allowed him to go ahead and do it. And it had an electric effect. I'm sure you're aware. It caused the investigation by the House Select Committee. All right. And then, of course, the next time it was widely shown was in Oliver Stone's film, JFK, in 1991. And he showed it repeatedly, I think 4 or 5 times. All right. Always having Kevin Costner saying back and to the left, back and to the left, back. And that, of course, provoked another inquiry called the Assassinations Record Review Board. So what I'm saying is those two examples show you the effect that the Zapruder film had on the American public when it was broadly shown. Why was it bottled up for so long?
And that, of course, is where you allude to, that the MSM not doing its job and being force-fed, perhaps, or just gently fed the information that it's meant to get out, and therefore we keep this narrative at bay. The importance of the work, as I mentioned in the introduction, could change the world forever, because if it was to turn out that the government officially was involved one way or another in the takedown of their own king, and I say that because he's the head of state and the head of government, he's both the prime minister and the king, or the president as we know him, this is something that for the United States of America, the country that acts as the global policeman, the arbiter of democracy and truth in the world, and can't even clean out its own backyard, well, then something is very, very wrong in that scenario, therefore. So the truth becoming official, and that's what you've been working on for the best part of 30 or more years now. How significant do you see this, therefore, that if we were to find out the truth of JFK's assassination and who was involved, how do you think it might change the world?
Well, one of the reasons I don't think it's been solved, or the MSM and the establishment won't let it be solved, is simply because of the impact it would have, you know, on American society. I mean, can you imagine waking up and seeing the New York Times, you know, front cover of the New York Times, JFK was killed by a conspiracy and the world changed and we didn't report it? Somehow we missed the story. You know, see, one of the most shocking things about, and this is just one particular angle that I like to talk about, you know, the Warren Commission report was issued in late September of 1964. The volumes, the 26 accompanying volumes of evidence, did not come out until late November of 1964, 2 months later. But all the huge outlets of the MSM praised the report, even though there's 6,700 footnotes in it that were all related to the volume. So in other words, without even reading the source notes, they were jumping on board. But then here's the capper. What happens in March of 1965? About 3 months after the volumes were issued, Lyndon Johnson sends the first combat troops to Vietnam. Now, as far as I know, I've never seen any contemporaneous, okay, reporting that there was a connection between the two events, all right? I mean, you would think somebody would say somewhere, geez, that's kind of funny. Wasn't Kennedy withdrawing from Vietnam at the time of his assassination? Now the Warren Commission report is filed saying that Oswald did it alone. And now 3 months later, Johnson is sending combat troops into Vietnam. Something, in other words, something that Kennedy would not do, you know, for 3 years, now Johnson was doing it in an almost record elapsed time, you know? So I really tried to find a reporter who picked up on that at the time, and I can't find anybody. Now, I know I shouldn't have to explain the impact the Vietnam War had, both in Southeast Asia and in the United States, because it was the beginning of tearing apart the social fabric of America. All right. It was the most divisive war since the Civil War. And that's saying something, because that was a full century before. All right. It divided up not just parts of the country, but families. Bob McNamara's son put up a Viet Cong flag in his bedroom. Okay. Secretary of Defense, the son of the Secretary of Defense. All right. So this is what happened to the United States. We went from a country that, and I'm old enough to remember this, that used to watch things like Leave It to Beaver and Ozzie and Harriet to movies like The Wild Bunch. Okay. In a matter of just like 6 years. Okay. That is what happened to the fabric of the United States of America due to Kennedy's assassination. Now, that's just one example. That's just one. And if you see the film JFK Destiny Betrayed, that's the long version, the 4 hour version, which I think they actually showed in Australia. All right. That they bought the 4 hour version. All right. That shows about five different areas where American foreign policy was sharply altered in just several months after Kennedy's assassination. All right. And that includes the Middle East.
And this is only the beginning, isn't it? Because if it turns out that that there is a certain organization, the three-letter agency that's involved in this, then one might consider, therefore, that at that point, even presidents, future presidents, would become subservient to its own spy agency. And that's the great concern here, is that the CIA, perhaps, if they're involved here, and we'll talk about that a bit more after the break, then who's really in charge of the United States and therefore the world? And many people can see, you know, straight through this, and this story just does not go away. So we'll explore that. Now, before we take a break, the book that that Jim is here to talk about today is called Chokeholds. We'll put that cover up after the break so that you can get a look at it, and I'll get Jim to explain exactly why he called it this. Very, very important. I think this is the beginning of the new way that evidence must be presented, that's irrefutable, hard evidence that is not what we've seen before. And this is the way that if you're going to change the system and perhaps crash the system, this is the level of detail that people want to do. The book's about 430 pages long and worth absolutely for any good researcher to get hold of and to understand this incredible amount of work. We'll talk a bit more about that after the break. Meanwhile, if you love a good documentary, then you'll love our special screenings. Uninterrupted Cinema features some of the latest or notable documentaries from the world's best filmmakers. You can check out TNT's website for more information. Weekends are better when you spend it with us on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
It's glorious and warm in the UK. Well, I'm in the south. Those very famous cliffs that you see, I'm not far from there, those white cliffs. They do chemtrail. I'm just looking actually up at the window here, and they are now starting to spray. I put this on Twitter. I had my huge, enormous tinfoil hat on, and there's all these people coming out going, no, that's quite normal. But they don't say it like that. I've noticed that people that disagree with what we say, they generally call me very abusive names. But you know what? It just rolls off, love. I don't care. I've been chased by so many cops. I felt wanted down Whitehall during the convict.
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
It's time to switch on
today's News Talk Radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah. TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour is famed JFK assassination researcher Jim DiEugenio. Jim, the book you called Chokeholds this time around, and it has the contributions of obviously yourself and four other authors. First of all, could you tell me why you decided to call the book Chokeholds?
Okay. This actually came about through the suggestion of a famous British researcher named Malcolm Blunt. All right. He said that the fact of the discoveries of a woman named don't tell me I'm going to slip Betsy Wolf. Okay, Betsy Wolf, that were not declassified until like 2003. Her work was he called it a chokehold. You can't explain it in any kind of benign way. And what he sent me, Betsy Wolf's work effort, to my knowledge, was never typed up in the memorandum form. All we have is her notes. This is what she discovered. She was supposed to examine the Oswald file at CIA. She asked for every charter from every division of the CIA. I think there's 9 of them. She then read through all 9 charters. She then mapped out on the board, okay, then this is what Oswald's file should do. All right. So then she did that. Then she asked for the file. Lo and behold, guess what? It didn't do anything like that. It didn't go to anywhere where it should have gone. It never went to the Soviet Russia division where it should have gone to. There was no, and this is what's really kind of what stunned her. There was no 201 file set up at CIA on Lee Harvey Oswald, even though that's the most common file that there is there. And there definitely should have been, but he was obviously an object of interest because not only was he a defector, but he threatened to give away radar secrets to the Russians. So she found out why there was no 201 file, because the file went to a place called Office of Security, which doesn't open up 201 files. So she called in these guys, one after another, asked them all. Yes, there should have been a 201 file. Yes, it should have gone to the Soviet Russia division. And then finally, in late 1978, when the House Select Committee was going to shut down, she called in a guy named Bob Gambino. Gambino was the head of the Office of Security at that time. And she explained her dilemma. Why did this happen? And this is what Gambino said. It doesn't matter how many documents come in. It doesn't matter if they're pre-stamped. If the client has gone to the first gate, which is called the Office of Mail Logistics, and made a request, then those papers will go to that client. Let me get to the bottom line. Somebody was rigging Oswald's file when he went to the Soviet Union. Now, why on earth would anybody do that to a nobody like Lee Harvey Oswald? Okay. You know, this, and so this is what Malcolm said. There's no benign way to explain something like this. So that's where we got the title. Okay. The JFK assassination chokeholds. And so then we went ahead and figured out about 8 or 9 others of like that. And that's, and so we put together how each one of these would cast severe doubt on the official story. But the combination of them all is simply irresistible, okay? And we did one on, for example, obstruction of justice, how every inquiry into this case has been obstructed. We did one on how people inside the inquiries disagreed with what the verdict was. And this includes the Warren Commission. I mean, how many people know that the Warren Commission was a minority report? Well, we proved that in the book, that 4 out of the 7 people disagreed with what the Warren Commission said. We did one on the medical evidence. I did that one. That one concentrated on the mystery of Kennedy's brain. Okay. Mm. Why it's never shown up in all these decades going on over a half century. All right. And so we, Andrew Eiler, who is a lawyer in Hamilton, Ontario, he did a wonderful piece on standards of proof.
Yes.
And how the neither the Warren Commission or the House Select Committee ever had a standard of proof, you know, which is absolutely necessary in any court of law. And then we tried to show how both Trump and Biden completely sideswiped the JFK Act. You can flip a coin as to which one is worse. You know, I actually think what Biden did is a little bit worse than what Trump did. All right. But we can talk about any and all of these. Well, we don't have enough time to do all of them, but we can talk about some of them.
Look, I really appreciate that you're able to touch on Andrew Eiler's work about the proof or standard of evidence. And I'm just going to draw here from the conclusion that you wrote. I'll just read a little bit from it. You said that in the introduction, lawyer Andrew Eiler sketched out different standards of proof in the law. He then explained how the beyond a reasonable doubt standard originated and why it is used in criminal cases like homicides, which the Kennedy case was. As Andrew notes, one reason is the highest standard in the law is that the public should not be left in doubt about innocent men having their rights, liberty, and perhaps their lives taken away unjustly. Andrew also noted that this high standard has to be sustained about every fact necessary to constitute the crime. And so here we are. And so there's the idea that in a civil case, you have a balance of probabilities, technically, you know, 51%. You have the beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what's used in a criminal case. But then you also introduced a third level. Can you explain that?
That's we're talking about administrative law. That's a clear and convincing. The standard in an administrative law case is clear and convincing. What that means is if you're going to terminate somebody their job and they bring in a lawyer, you have an administrative hearing, okay? And you have to prove a clear and convincing evidence, all right? Now, I'm so glad you actually read that because, in my opinion, does anything describe the Kennedy case any better than that? That you have this high standard beyond a reasonable doubt so that the community will not bear the guilt of condemning an innocent man. Well, isn't that exactly what happened in the Kennedy case? Isn't that why we're still talking about it 60 years later? Okay. And isn't that what's happened to the social fabric of the United States? Okay. Because we did not obey that. In fact, we didn't obey any standard. Okay. If you, Andrew said, you know, none of these three were upheld by any investigation. Okay. So this is the problem you have. Okay. When you don't obey any standard of proof, you know, in what is, and then you go ahead and take away a guy's right. By the way, Jason, Oswald never had a lawyer. He never had a lawyer with the Dallas police. He never had a lawyer with the Warren Commission. He never had a lawyer for the House Select Committee on Assassinations.
That's extraordinary detail, isn't it? And then when you have the weight of the world on one narrative and that person has seemingly no one in his corner whilst he was alive and after he died, you have to realize that this is, it's almost unacceptable. Well, it is unacceptable. That's why we are talking about it 60 years later. But again, it's one of these facts that leads you to get to the point of a chokehold, something that's irrefutable on its own. And this is the point again with what you set this standard of evidence that these chokeholds on their own give you enough reasoning to justify a reinvestigation, but putting them all together, you are at another level entirely. And I also like the fact that in the book, Chokeholds, and I'll ask if the guys can put the picture of the book on the screen for people to recognize, is that you're not dealing with, you know, half-truths or conspiracy ideas. It's just based on pure evidence here. It's almost like you're saying you can chuck everything else out. We're concentrating on these 9 or 10 particular topics. And I think that's really, really important. You can see it on the screen, the JFK assassination chokeholds.
Yeah, that's one of the things we tried to do, Jason. We tried to make it as factual as we possibly could. And we based a lot of it on a declassified record. of, and I'm sure you're aware, the Assassinations Record Review Board. All right. Mm. That body came about because of Oliver Stone's film, and they declassified something like 2 million pages of documents. For instance, my chapter on the autopsy could not have been written without the ARB, where you actually had, for the first time, the official photographer of the JFK autopsy, a guy named John Stringer, confronted with the photographs of the brain. He actually said, "No, I didn't take those pictures." Wow. So here we are. Here we are, Jason. 35 years later, we have the official photographer of the JFK autopsy. No, I didn't take those pictures. I don't use that kind of film, and that's not the technique I used. So it took us 35 years to figure that out.
It's extraordinary, because the whole idea is that when things like this happen, if you're presenting it in a case, you can't use certain evidence for reasons. If there are rules of evidence, this is the point. Now, whilst we're talking about the brain, there's some more pictures I'm going to ask the studio to put up for us on screen. There's one of a gentleman pointing to his forehead, and this is taken from the book. And then we're going to show some pictures consistently of other people pointing to the back of their heads. There you go. Who are we looking at here, Jim?
Okay, go ahead.
So can you see that picture on the screen there? So that's the first one. We've got he's specifically pointing to where the bullet's coming from the front. This is part of the particular evidence that we're talking about. And I'm going to put Jason, some more.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and then I'm going to put some more pictures on the screen, because it's a repetition of pattern here, because the idea is that when we're talking about if there's only three shots and Oswald is standing behind, how have we got this situation? Everyone's reporting that something came from the back of his head.
Yeah, yeah. The pictures that you're talking about are a lot of the people who were at either the Bethesda or the Parkland Hospital, and they all said that they saw, now it varies in size, but let's be conservative, it was like a baseball sized hole in the back of JFK's skull. All right, now I don't have to tell you, you probably know this, that is strongly indicative of a shot from the front, okay, for the simple reason that when bullets enter a target, they usually leave small, tightly wound bullet holes. When they exit, because they carry all this blood and tissue and bone with them, they explode out the back, all right, leaving a much larger hole. Now, let me explain this, because I think it's very, very important. When you have 42 witnesses, about half of them from Parkland, and the other half from Bethesda, and the House Select Committee lies about this. They actually, we proved that they lied about this in their report, saying that although the Parkland witnesses saw this baseball-sized hole in the back of Kennedy's skull, the people at Bethesda who had the body for a much longer time and did the autopsy did not see it. That was a lie. And by the way, let me show you how bad this is. They knew it was a lie, because they referred to staff reports. The staff reports, when they interviewed the Bethesda people, all said the same thing. Yeah, there was a hole in the back of Kennedy's head. And we would not have known that unless the ARB declassified this information. All right? Okay, now, let me just add briefly. The problem with Kennedy's brain is simple. The official weight of Kennedy's brain is 1,500 grams. That's actually written down. The average weight of a brain, and listen to this carefully, is 1,340 grams. So here's my question. How in God's name can Kennedy's brain weigh more than the average when in the Zapruder film we see his skull exploding? Okay, blood and tissue going up into the air. We have pictures of the back seat of the limousine where there's blood and tissue all over the back. We see Jackie Kennedy's suit. smeared with the same thing. In the Zapruder film, you see Jackie Kennedy going out the back of the car onto the hood, the trunk. And they asked her, what were you doing? She goes, part of his brain went out the back of the car and I was trying to retrieve it. Well, guess what? She did retrieve it and she gave it to a doctor at Parkland Hospital. So how on earth did Kennedy's brain weigh more than the average with all that damage done to it? Plus, we have some about 13 witnesses, I think, and I put these in the book, who all said that a large part of Kennedy's brain was gone. Okay? You know, so this is the whole mystery of Kennedy's brain, I believe, is one of the three or four most important pieces of evidence that there is today. And that's why I wrote the chapter, you know, about it, you know, in the book. It's very, very powerful. Let's put it this way. If you're talking about a gunshot wound murder to the skull, and A, the brain was not sectioned, and it wasn't, because that's how you find directionality, by sectioning the brain. You put the brain in something called formalin solution, it solidifies, then you either cut it like a bread loaf or you cut it like a pie, and you detect the pattern of the bullet through the brain. If you don't do that and you don't have the brain, is any judge in the world going to listen to that case? No, I don't think so.
It's an extraordinary fact that's been ignored, but also very, very convenient that Oswald was taken out before charged or trial. And Jack Ruby appears to take him out the same way. It was almost as if the whole story was plotted one way or another in advance, and that's where many people sort of get caught up in it. And it seems to be a self-fulfilling prophecy that we can rely on these outdated narratives, if you will, to justify a status quo. And I find that incredibly, incredibly frustrating, Jim. We'll take a break in a moment, because when we come back, I do want to talk to you a little bit more about the Jack Ruby was on a mission chapter in the book. I think that's really important, because this character is such a significant part, and it was also the perfect conclusion, therefore, to silence Oswald once and for all, and that just becomes an incredibly convenient fact for everyone. But that's the whole point here, that there are just too many convenient facts about a brain that doesn't weigh the right amount, the fact that there was no looking or testing to work out the direction of the said bullet, that would tell you everything that you needed to know. And it would put to rest the idea of a theory that he was shot from in front if you could prove that he wasn't. And that's the whole point. Let's take that break. We'll continue our discussion. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends here on TNT.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying, by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
We come from a long line of farmers, and there's a sense of pride, but there's also a significant amount of pressure.
Farmers have to take care of their physical and their mental health, because what's a farm without a farmer?
Watching the sun come up, that's my time. I can have a cup of coffee, and every day is a new opportunity.
That's cool.
Your hands got so cool. Yay!
Don't forget to check in on yourself. Love your mind.
Weekends are better when you spend it with us. Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour is famed JFK researcher Jim DiEugenio. He's got a brand new book. Let's see if we can put it on the screen for you. It's called Chokeholds, and it is a factual account of 10 separate events, pieces of evidence, chapters written by lawyers. Jim was a school teacher, but 3 separate lawyers are involved out of the 5 authors. Jim, this is a big deal. Can you tell me how it was that you got so many great people to be able to contribute in this?
I'm glad you asked that question. See, when Malcolm Blunt suggested this, all right, Paul Blue told us about this at a JFK convention in Dallas, where people like Mark Adamczyk, myself, and Matt Crumpton were attending. And that's how he recruited us into this endeavor. And then Mark had a lawyer from Florida, got in contact with Andrew, the lawyer up in Hamilton, Ontario, because they were working on the JFK Act, you know, trying to figure out how we can solve what happened with Trump and Biden. And he volunteered to join. And so that's how we got this group of people, 3 of them being attorneys. That is Mark, Andrew, and Matt being attorneys. So that's how this crew got together.
It's a terrific story. And it's interesting, isn't it, that many of us were wondering after a promise from Trump that he would get to the bottom of what's going on and didn't and delayed it. And it's something that many of us are wondering, is it to delay it perhaps for a second term? It's an enormous gamble, something that would change the course of history for the United States once and for all. Why it was, one of the questions that some people have is that his choice of his administration, of course, Mike Pompeo was the former head of the CIA who becomes his Secretary of State. They've since had some sort of falling out, and you wonder what the influence may well have been within his administration to delay him. It's not dissimilar to him coming out very strong against vaccines and then siding with Bill Gates over RFK Jr. And you wonder if Trump himself may have been compromised, or is he playing some sort of game of chess to capture everyone? And this is the stuff that makes people pull their hair out in frustration, because 61 years on, Jim, it's the status quo. Nothing has changed.
There's 4,600, almost 4,700 documents that are still classified, either in whole or in part. Now, here we are on the verge of the 61st anniversary, and we're still waiting for the government to come clean on this. Now, we talked a little bit about this in the book, how Trump said that, I believe this was in October of 2017, he issued a tweet and said that he was going to go ahead and declassify the last of the JFK documents. And by law, he had to do that, because in the actual act passed in 1992, it said everything should be declassified 25 years hence, which was in October of 2017. Well, guess what? On the day everything's supposed to be declassified, the CIA and the FBI go into Trump's office, and they more or less convinced him not to go ahead and do this. Now, what's so interesting about this is that, I'm sure you've heard this, Judge Napolitano asked Trump, why did you renege on your promise to declassify everything for the American people on the assassination of President Kennedy? And Trump said, Judge, if you had seen what they showed me, you would have done the same thing. All right. Now, there's another end note to this story. When Tucker Carlson, I believe in 2000, I think it was 2021 or something like that, he did a show on the JFK case, accusing the CIA of being complicit in the assassination. The next day, he got a call from Pompeo's lawyer telling him to shut up and don't say anything like that again. So you wonder, was Pompeo Tucker Carlson's source? Because he said he had a source in the CIA, but he was not going to reveal who it was. See, people think that this is an old story. It is not an old story. It's an ongoing tragedy, you know, that's still going on today as we speak.
Jim, that is an incredible revelation, and it shows you that exactly right. Even when you have the outlying anti-establishment president, he's still caught up in it and can't break through. But what an extraordinary statement to make from President Trump to say that if you saw what I saw, you wouldn't release it either. And this is this common thread that we can't, that the general public can't take it, or, of course, that other great chestnut for reasons of national security. I mean, what national security do you have when you kill your own king, for goodness sake?
Right, exactly. You know, like, it's sort of like that line from A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth. Mm. Yeah, I think the American people can handle the truth. You know, I think we're old enough and wise enough and experienced enough to handle the truth. About, I mean, most of us suspect there was foul play anyway. So what's wrong with getting it out in the open?
Has the world not taken a look at the United States and the rest of the Western world at the moment? We can't handle the lies anymore. Look at the state of our look at the state of our countries today. People are struggling: the homeless crisis, immigration crisis, drug crisis, transgender scenario, confused children, drug addiction. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. What kind of dystopian fairy tale are they leading us to believe? We need the truth, and here we come. Now, Jim, we've only got about 10 minutes left, so I want to ask you about this chapter that I mentioned before the break. A little bit more about Jack Ruby. If this is one of the chokeholds, what is it in the book that you're focusing on in terms of the man who killed Lee Harvey Oswald so that he would not be sent to trial? What do we know about this that indicates there is more to this plot?
There's two or three layers to this whole mystery of Jack Ruby. All right. First of all, the Warren Commission whitewashed Ruby as much as they did Oswald. All right. Jack Ruby was essentially a man for all seasons. He was the perfect guy to do what he was assigned to do. Number one, he was a low-level mob guy, you know, in Dallas, all right? Number two, he was involved in CIA gun running. Number three, he was a best friend of the Dallas police. And when I say best friend, I mean best friend. I mean, they used to go to his bars, and they used to get free food. They used to get free booze. You know, he would supply them with women because it was a, as they call back then, a burlesque show, all right? So he was the perfect guy to run around the Dallas police that weekend. He was seen by approximately four witnesses the morning that he polished off Oswald at Dallas police headquarters, all right? He just happened to be right across the street from the back end of the Dallas police headquarters exactly when Oswald was being transferred, okay, from the city to the county jail. I mean, talk about exquisite timing. I didn't know this, by the way, until somebody showed me. He goes, Jim, the Western Union office was right behind the Dallas police headquarters. Anybody could have, like, gone to a window or opened the back door, you know, and waved at Ruby and said, okay, come on in. And this is how he got in. He did not come down the Main Street ramp. Okay, that did not happen. All right. The guy guarding the ramp took a lie detector test. He passed. The guy running security that day, he drugged himself up before the test, and he still couldn't pass the test. All right. Now, also, if you look at the scene of the famous film of Ruby shooting Oswald, you'll see that there was supposed to be what they call a four-corner pocket protection. That is, a cop on each side, a cop behind him, a cop in front of him. If you look at that murder of Oswald, you'll see the reason Ruby can get in is because Captain Wolf Fritz, separated from Oswald, leaving Oswald exposed to Jack Ruby. That's why he gets such a clean shot off. All right. Also, something that we talked about in the film, JFK Revisited, It's the oddest coincidence of these two horns going off. All right. One, when Oswald comes into the foyer, okay, there's one horn going on. And then there's a second one right before Ruby jumps out of the crowd and shoots Oswald. Now, here's the capper to that. There was only one feed of this murder on NBC, okay? The two horns get edited out of almost any broadcast version of that film clip. In fact, the reason I found out about it is because a veteran researcher named Ray Marcus calls me up one day and he says, Jim, which version of Oswald's murder do you have? I said, what are you talking about? Which version of Oswald's murder do I have? And he says, do you have the one with no horns, one horn, or two horns? I said, I have the one horn one. He said, "That's isn't that it? He goes, no, you got the wrong one. I'll send you the real one. So he sent it to me, and there I am sitting there. I go, holy Jesus, this cover-up is even worse than I thought it was.
It's absolutely extraordinary. So what's the significance of removing one horn from this particular video?
Well, because if you see it with both of them, it looks very suspicious. Mm. Like somehow Ruby was being cued in. Mm. Okay, now listen, I'm not saying that's what happened. It might have just been a coincidence. But what I'm saying is that the people have the right to see the whole thing without it being censored.
Yes.
Right? And I don't have to tell you how important Oswald's murder was. Because immediately when Oswald gets murdered live on TV, half the country's thinking, did they do that because they didn't want him to talk? Is that it? You know, I think that's only a natural progression of thinking. You know, why would this guy do this live on national television?
It's the great mystery, isn't it? Because the other half of the population might think that Jack Ruby was some sort of hero to be able to get rid of the killer of the president, and that's the end of it, because he made some claim about it. He did it for Jackie, JFK's wife, to spare her the pain of the trial. I mean, it's just a preposterous statement. We also know that Ruby died from cancer sometime down the track, but not too long. Official reports say he didn't have cancer at the time, but one would wonder, therefore, if he did perhaps have this particular diagnosis, that it would have been motivation to pay him off, to put him into this position. Is there more to that story?
Well, Jason, what's so odd about this is that Ruby's appeal had just succeeded. All right. He had appealed his guilty verdict because his lawyers had moved for a change of venue, which was denied by the judge. And the appeals court agreed now with him that you should have had a change of venue. And so they changed the retrial to a place called Wichita Falls. About a month and a half before the new trial was to begin, kaput goes Jack Ruby, you know, of a mysterious cancer plague, okay, that had suddenly riddled his body, you know. And so I think a lot of people would wonder, did they not want this guy to get a retrial? Did they not want to see him somehow walk free? Did they not want to see him take the stand in his own defense? Well, see, these are the kind of things you get when you make such a mess of these things, you know? So that's a very, very serious problem with the whole Jack Ruby story.
It's a remarkable chapter. It's one of 10 in the book. Now, just quickly, we've only got about 3 or 4 minutes to go. I want to ask you about something that was sort of an aside. It was the Gerald Ford, Nelson Rockefeller. Rockefeller is heading the MK Ultra hearings. And for some reason, they choose to do a small component on JFK and back to the Zapruder film. What was the purpose of bringing Zapruder up in the MK Ultra hearings?
That's a great question, isn't it? Okay. But what was going to happen there, that they were going to do this mini review of the JFK case for something called the Rockefeller Commission. And it was only a very cursory thing. But what's so interesting about it is that before it was released to the public, Dick Cheney wanted to review the report All right. Now, that is very, very, very bizarre because Cheney, of course, is in the Ford administration at this time. Okay. This is how bad the censorship gets, you know, in the JFK case. A young Dick Cheney, who nobody really knew who he was, is already in on the ground floor of the JFK case through Jerry Ford.
Remarkable story to think that Dick Cheney at this stage, I mean, he can only be what a man is, perhaps in his 30s or something like that at this stage, and
right.
already has the power to command here. Now, the other interesting part is Gerald Ford's a very interesting character because George H.W. Bush would come out at a later stage and say that Gerald Ford was the most honest man in politics, or words to that effect. And he was overdoing it for some reason. And it becomes quite clear that Gerald Ford, who becomes the president after Nixon resigns and technically appoints Nelson Rockefeller to be his vice president, that whole character and his work there, Gerald Ford is one of these sort of unknown presidents, falls into office, literally, very, very strange. And I don't know if there's more to that whole Ford story, but it's ironic because there have been stories and reports. I've interviewed people such as Fiona Barnett here in Australia, who was abused as a child, and she mentions names like Nixon and Ford, which are horrific accusations that she's made in her book. So I don't know. And then she also talks about MKUltra and being put through that program herself. So that's something to be explored at a later date. But it's just horrific what we're seeing. But, Jim, we've got to the end of where we are today. I just want to put on the screen, if you can, one more time, the cover of the book, Chokeholds. It's absolutely brilliant. And if you're just starting out and want to get involved with what's going on there, Jim's got it on holding it up as well on the screen. We'll come back in a sec to see that. There you are. It is a masterpiece of information. And if you haven't started before and you want something in print to get to, this is the one that will get you to understand factual information. You may have seen the films. You may have seen the ones that Jim's been involved with, but please check them out. Absolutely incredible. Once again, Jim, leading the way on this very, very important historical significance, not just for the United States, but for the entire free world. It is an absolute must read, and we must continue to do the great work that you're doing. Thank you again, Jim DeEugenio.
Thank you, Jason. Very nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you on the show, and just a great thrill, an enormous pleasure to be able to speak to someone who is making the best possible difference. And this is the point. This is the standard that we need to set. If the authorities will not act, it is up to the citizens, one at a time, until there is too many for all of them to say no anymore. And Jim DeEugenio has been lighting that fuse for our freedom for the best part of 30-something years. We need more men and women like him. We'll take a break and we'll be back with more on the other side. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends here on TNT.